Oh, hello. I'm Gemma Kaneko, and this is Cannonballs, the podcast where we dive straight into the literary canon. I'm joined, as always, by Ben Cosman. Hi, Ben.
Hi, Gemma.
Our book for the next 2 weeks is the Jane Austen classic of all classics, Pride and Prejudice. And our guest, yes, we have a guest again for this book, is the Lizzie Bennet of my life, Lauren McCarter. Welcome, Lauren.
Thank you. That's very kind of you, but we all know I'm the Caroline Bingley of everyone's life.
Wow. Well, that is tough because, woof. All right.
I went through all of the chapters to give myself a little like one-line note that was like, here's what happens in this chapter, because they're each like 2 pages long. And one of my notes is just like, Caroline Bingley is a bitch. That's this chapter.
Seriously, she is.
All she does is be horrible.
Can't wait to talk about it.
We'll get there.
But before we get too deeply into it, I just want to do our scouting report, since this is technically a new book for Ben, at least. I read this a long time ago. Lauren has read it many, many times.
And I've at least seen the movie. A lot.
And Ben has never read it, so
I've never read it. I don't know,
astonishing. But as always in our scouting report, this is before we read the book, it's what we think about it going in. We have 5 different categories and it's graded on a 20 to 80 scale. It's a baseball thing, don't think about it too hard. So for classicness, we all gave it an 80.
It's super classic, aggressive.
Yeah, it's
classic.
Like the classic.
I mean, everybody has heard of it. It's just like the ultimate. When you think like classic literature, I'm pretty sure this is the book you're picturing, or maybe like if you're a snob, War and Peace.
It's so classic that in Bridget Jones's Diary, they gave Colin Firth's character the same last name.
Well, it's the same, whatever. It's the same story. We'll talk about that later.
It's also the most famous first line in any book, I think.
Oh, Tale of Two Cities beats it out.
Oh, you don't think it's Anna Karenina?
No, I don't think it's Anna Karenina.
No, I think this is definitely. I'd agree with Tale of Two Cities.
Lolita?
But
no, I don't know. Also, the first line of Lolita. What is it? Lolita was young and I wanted to have sex with her. I assume that's the first line of Lolita.
Well, we're going to have a different fight about this at a later time. I'm going to do a mini episode where every guest we have just debates what their favorite first line in literature is. So we all gave that an 80. For accessibility, overall, we gave it a 60, but that was because some of us were lower and some of us were higher. I put it at 65.
I put it as 50 because I had to reread every sentence like 4 times. There are so many commas.
Yeah, there are a lot of commas. I noticed that. She really sets things apart.
But there's a lot of dialogue too, which I think makes it kind of snappy.
Sure. As far as classic literature goes, it's certainly snappy, but I would give like classic literature as a whole an accessibility score of 0. I know it starts at 20, but I'm breaking the paradigm.
That's like if a baseball player had no arms or something.
Exactly. There was a one-armed pitcher, wasn't there?
Yeah, one hand, Jim Adams.
Yeah.
Ben, what did you give it?
I think I gave it a 60 or 65 because, well, it was easier to read, like purely mechanics. It was easier to read than I was expecting. But when I think accessibility, I also think it's like reputation. And to me, it's a high bar where because it is such a classic, you think it is either going to be harder or boring, or particularly, you know, coming from a high school boy perspective where my mom kept trying to get me to read this book. And I said, no, mom, that looks lame.
Sorry, you can hear my eyes rolling. I did.
No, I know. I was wrong. Clearly, I was wrong. But I think that plays into the accessibility where people think this book is stodgy or, you know, whatever. They're wrong. I want to be honest there. I want to be clear about that point. But I think it has that reputation.
As always, I personally, I don't want to speak for you, Lauren, but I don't care what men think.
That's fair. That's fair.
For our next category, pop culture influence, I think we all also gave it an 80.
Full 80.
Yeah.
Multiple because, film adaptations, for starters.
Yes. I don't think this is not scientific and I refuse to do any research about this, but I also think it's probably the piece of work that has the most fanfic published about it as legitimate work of its own.
Oh my God, there's so
much. Oh, interesting.
There are multiple published, I think I can think off the top of my head of 3 like actually published, not published on fanfiction.net.
Yeah, like books, like actual real publishing houses, like and also
people got paid for it.
Yes.
They went on book tours, presumably.
Right. And like film adaptations even beyond like things that are based on it, straight adaptations, a mystery series in which Elizabeth solves murders at Pemberley. So like, okay.
Oh, I forgot about
that's
that.
That's a whole thing.
You read the Curtis Sittenfeld update, right?
I did, and we will discuss it, but we'll talk about adaptations.
This is, no spoilers, guys.
Yeah, we'll talk about it in the next episode when we finish the book, and we can talk about adaptations. But I did read the Curtis Sittenfeld adaptation. Next category is humor. Jane Austen known generally for being kind of like pithy and funny. Overall, We were a little bit lower on this than other categories. Lauren, you went a little bit lower.
I did, but I also have a high bar for humor, I think. Yes. And I think this is, again, a lot of grading on the curve of classic literature. This is funnier than a lot of classic literature, but most classic literature is just so dreary.
I'm so happy you're on this podcast, Lauren.
Well, this came for this book, guys. Yeah.
I mean, I think in terms of other, like, in my head, I always think of Jane Austen as quite funny, so I went high on this. Also, I think that I was let down by Prince and the Pauper being so not funny that I thought, like, oh, this has to be so much better. So I maybe went a little bit higher than this book actually deserves.
Yeah. I've never read this book. This is actually my first Austen at all. Very funny. I mean, honestly, we'll talk about this in the plot, but Mr. Collins' proposal to Elizabeth, that chapter, is maybe the funniest scene in all of classic literature I've ever read. I was yelling when I read that chapter.
Mr. Bennett also has a lot of solid zingers.
Yeah.
Yes, Mr. Bennett.
On his own children.
Yeah.
He kind of hates his kids. Anyway, last category, relevance. Overall, we gave it a 65.
Okay.
I went high with 70.
I stayed strong at 60. I didn't want to overestimate it. I feel like, you know, now that we're on to fourth wave feminism, this is slightly less relevant than it used to be.
I disagree with that because I think it ultimately at its core is about how it's worth people are worth like changing. Like the structure of this novel is really based in a lot of garbage sexist things, but also like it is ultimately about the idea that maybe there is a man out there who is does rich. Listen and what? Change things also is rich. That is a benefit. But
sure, I see it.
Then what did you give it?
I think I know how this ends, but at least the first half, I gave it, I think, a 60 or 65, just because it does seem very much a product of its time. And sort of, I haven't read the Curtis Sittenfeld adaptation like you have, Gemma.
Trash.
It would seem.
Fighting words, we're coming for you, Curtis Sittenfeld.
It seems to me like it would be hard to place in a contemporary time.
Just go watch some Bridget Jones. Anyway, all right, so that's the scouting report. In case you had no idea what Pride and Prejudice was somehow before this, now you do. It is the Austen book. There is very little chance that you don't at least know the main plot, but it doesn't really matter because we're going to do our minute plot summary. In this episode, we've read up to chapter 31 or to volume 2, chapter 8, depending on your edition. Ben is going to do that plot summary, and he's going to do it in a minute. Right, Ben?
Oh, I'm going to try.
All right, let's do it.
All right, so Mr. Bingley is a wealthy, eligible bachelor who shows up new in town to Hertfordshire, I think. And so Mrs. Bennet has 5 daughters. She wants one of them to marry him. Mr. Bingley takes a liking to Jane and she to him, so they dance and hang out at all the town balls that everybody throws. Bingley has a friend, Mr. Darcy, who is cold to everyone, but he and Elizabeth have this will-they-won't-they thing going on, even though Elizabeth is adamant that she dislikes him thoroughly. The Bennet's cousin, Mr. Collins, shows up, and since he is heir to their estate because of dumb sexist rules, he wants to marry one of the girls. He proposes to Elizabeth, and possibly the worst marriage proposal in all of literature. Instead, he marries Elizabeth's best friend, Charlotte Lucas, who accepts the proposal because her family is poor. Also, Elizabeth takes a shine to another new guy who is kind of poor, and so he wants to marry a rich girl. Bingley goes back to London, and Jane goes to London, too, with her aunt, and Elizabeth goes to visit newly married Charlotte and Mr. Collins. And I believe that's where we ended.
Yeah, that's a good summary. Mm-hmm. Though maybe we'll talk about, well, one of our main topics will be about marriage and like, is it because she was poor that Charlotte married Mr. Collins? Like, that's the real question. So we'll discuss.
I checked with a British friend on pronunciations. Shout out to Lauren Rickard. I love you, baby. And it is Derbyshire and Hertfordshire, though they're E's.
That's so stupid.
I hate that.
Love you anyway, Lauren.
That's why we dumped all the tea in the harbor. Oh my God. All right.
They kept calling it Ta.
So let's summarize our characters really quick, the most important ones, so you know who we're talking about when we talk about them. Ben, you wrote these, so this is you again.
All right. So Elizabeth Bennet is our main protagonist. She's the second oldest of the Bennet sisters. She reads books and everyone thinks she's weird because she reads books.
Okay. It's
she
not also like a Belle situation.
Also,
though.
In every characterization of Pride and Prejudice since, they've always been like, Lizzie reads so much. And like the one scene where she's reading a book, she's like, I don't really read.
Yeah. She's like, I read sometimes, but I also do other stuff. because I have a lot of interest.
Yeah, it's like the whole point of the book is like she's kind of smarter than her sisters, who are all horrible.
And she likes to read novels, but also only sometimes.
She's also clearly the Austin stand-in, I think.
Yeah, which is weird because her sister's name is Jane.
Yeah. Right.
Anyway,
segue. Right, so Jane is Liz's older sister. She basically, her only characteristic, as far as I can tell, is she wants to marry Bingley.
No, she's super hot is important.
Right, also,
and
yeah.
And also, she relentlessly thinks well of everyone. Like, somebody could come up and punch her in the face, and she'd be like, I'm sure he had a good reason, sir.
Yeah.
Like, Jane will not think ill of anyone, no matter what, to such ridiculous degrees.
Bingley is the new guy to town who also just seems pleasant and wants to marry Jane, or get with Jane at least. Mr. Darcy is his standoffish friend who nobody likes, really. Caroline is Mr. Bingley's very catty sister. Lydia and Kitty are the youngest Bennet sisters, yes, who have they're like obsessed with the redcoat soldiers in town. Mary is a Bennet sister who seems like she has an antisocial reputation and is also probably the best sister.
Interesting.
No, Mary's by far the worst sister.
Yeah, Mary, there's a whole
thing. Lydia is better than Mary, and Mary's worse.
I've only read half of it, but I love Mary right now. But also, I don't really know anything about her, so maybe I'm wrong. Mr. and Mrs. Bennet are the girl's parents. Charlotte Lucas is Elizabeth's best friend and calls her Eliza, which I like. Mr. Collins is the Bennet's cousin, heir to their estate. He's a pastor and also just a colossal dipshit. And Mr. Wickham is a nice gentleman who's enlisting in the army, I believe.
LOL, first half of the book. Yes, those are the important characters. So just to sum up really quickly, Lizzie is the protagonist. Jane is her hot older sister. Mr. Bingley is an eligible bachelor. Darcy is sort of an arrogant dick. Caroline is a bitch. Lydia and Kitty are dumb. Mary is just...
Such a drip.
Mr. and Mrs. Bennet are the parents. Charlotte Lucas is like the ugly friend. Mr. Collins is a bore, and Mr. Wickham is a dubious army officer. A gold digger. Let's say that. Yeah, Wickham is a gold digger.
Who isn't? Like, that should be the new title of this
book.
Yeah,
it should have just be called the gold digger.
I have a lot of problems with Mary, because originally, like, I wanted to feel bad for Mary, because, like, she's... Like, they say explicitly, like, she's not the pretty one. Like, all four of her sisters are pretty, and Mary's the boring one. Who's like, well, because I'm not pretty, I'm going to learn to play the piano. Like, that's Mary's whole deal. But she's also such a dick the whole way through. We probably haven't gotten to the parts where she's like, no, because it's later in the book where Mary starts being like, well, you know, this wouldn't have happened if she weren't such a slut. Mary's awful.
Mary's whole thing is that, yeah, she...
Like, arguably by the end of the book, Lydia is the villain.
Fun
not
times.
To spoil it or anything. Caroline and Lydia are definitely the villains of this
Caroline
book.
Is just a huge bitch. But anyway,
yeah.
Let's just talk about the first overall premise of this book, which is that the very first line is that that single men in possession of a fortune are in want of a wife. Marriage is the ultimate thing. When I was reading this, I was like, I can't believe there might be, again, I don't do any research, a video game in which you are Mrs. Bennet and you just try to get all your daughters married.
That sounds like a great game. I would play that game.
So that's what this book is about, is that ultimately everyone is single and would like to be married, or...
Yeah.
Is thought that marriage is the best state. So do you think that in this book, marriage seems like a desirable state?
I mean, look at the marriages that we, like, the only marriages we get an inside view of are what, Mr. and Mrs. Bennet, who hate each other.
Like, how did they get married in the first place? That's the real question.
Yeah, I wonder about that as well. But, like, Mr. Bennet clearly does not like Mrs. Bennet at all and only likes Lizzie, really, and, like, kind of likes Jane and really rather wishes he didn't have a family, it seems. So, like, the inside view of marriage that we're getting is pretty drab. Like, it's not even just, like, they're not angry at each other all the time. It's just, like, Mrs. Bennet is, like, one of those chickens from the Muppets. It's always like, bah, 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 bah. Like, she never stops. And Mr. Bennet is just, like, trying to hide at all times. Like, he lives in his library and doesn't come out. And that's certainly not an exciting view of marriage. Like, it's not like, yeah, this is what I'm hoping for in my life. All the girls are like, cannot wait for this life. But that's not what marriage is to them, clearly. Like, they don't see that as, like, yeah, this is what marriage is. Like, they have 100% swallowed, like, you get married and you're happy forever because you're married and that's a magic wand.
Is that, I don't know. I think I took it a lot of most of the characters, or maybe it's just Elizabeth because we get her perspective so much, that it's more just a practicality. Like, I think, to me, it seemed like happiness and love were completely irrelevant to marriage in this book. Like, I don't think Mrs. Bennet wants any of her daughters to marry for love.
No, she doesn't care about that at all. But
Jane obviously does.
Jane clearly does. But I think that that's there's a cognitive dissonance where, like, yes, of course, they all need to get married. And as a matter of practicality, because, like, they couldn't have jobs. Like, getting married is their job. Like,
right. It's also, what is everyone, as a wife. Does anyone have jobs in this book? Like, none of the men
super
also seem
unclear.
To have jobs.
And the people who do have jobs are looked down upon. Like,
right.
Just,
right. Like their lawyer Phillips's, cousin.
Yeah,
yeah.
It's like, how dare he work? And, like, even when William, like, they mentioned William Lucas, Charlotte's dad, father, when he gets knighted, he's like, well, I'm not going to have a job anymore. That's for commoners. And leaves town. Like, so getting married is their job, but they also, I think the only way you can live in a society where your only possibility of living is to, like, marry someone, whether or not you have any intention of liking them at all, is to fool yourself that it's something you want. And so, and, like, to make it have all of these fairy tale rewards once you pass that threshold. Like, they have to tell themselves that, and I think everyone pretty unequivocally and unquestioningly does. Like,
well, except for Charlotte, right? Because when she, so when Mr. Collins proposes to Elizabeth, and he's like, all these high-flown protestations of how she's so great and he's gonna love her forever, whatever. And she's like, yeah, you've known me for like a week. That's kind of bullshit. But then he proposes to Charlotte 3 days later with the almost the exact same amount of feelings. Charlotte accepts him. And when she's talking to Lizzie about it later, she's like, I mean, come on. Like, he's practical. He might be the worst, but he has a nice house. It's on some good land. Like, I'm going to have these nice houses and things. And, like, otherwise, I don't have that many prospects. Like, if I get married to someone, I'm probably not going to have a nice house. I'm probably not going to have good neighbors. And that's going to be lame. So she seems to be fully aware of the practicalities of the situation, which... Yeah. Lizzie judges her for.
And also, it's explicit. Charlotte is 27.
Yeah.
Which, like, Christmas cake, nobody wants it after the 25th. but, like, she clearly is very, very aware, and her family has made her aware, it seems like, that she is a burden. And, like, as soon as she's married, they're talking about, like, she knew she would no longer be a burden on her younger brothers. And, like, it's like, Jesus Christ. And, like, I went through and figured out how old everyone is. So Jane's 23 and Elizabeth's 20. Mary's 18 or 19, but it's never mentioned because, like, nobody really cares. And then Kitty's 17 and Lydia's 15. Okay, you and Mary. But so, like, it's such a big difference between 27 and 20. First of all, it makes me wonder why they're best friends. But, you know, Charlotte at 27 seems to be the only one with a clear-eyed view of marriage in this world.
I mean, I guess you could say that that extra 7 years on Lizzie gives her that, because she's just been waiting on the shelf, essentially.
Exactly. That's how I always thought of it. And, like, the 2005 movie, like, makes that more explicit, but we're not going to be intertextual about it.
We can do that in the next episode. Yeah. When we finish it, I think it's better to talk about adaptations, because then we can talk about them as a whole.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, I definitely think that Charlotte's more mercenary about it because she's out of options. Like, she doesn't have time to be idealistic about it anymore. And also, she played it right. Like, she gets, like, when we get to Hunsford later on, she's like, yeah, this is the room that I use that Mr. Collins doesn't come into.
Yeah. And then Lizzie's like, oh, why would you not pick this nicer room? Oh, I see, because he never walks by this part of the house.
Leaves you alone in here. Like, she's got it going on. She's figured it out. She's mistress of her home. She gets to go to Rosings all the time. We'll get there. Charlotte figured out, like, Charlotte gamed marriage.
She really did. I mean, we should, because she does come up in this book, but we should have mentioned Lady Catherine de Bourgh, who is Mr. Collins' patron, and she's just like a salty rich lady.
She's, I guess, worse than Mary. I just really dislike her. She's so annoying.
I don't like Lady Catherine either. And in a lot of adaptations, she's portrayed as like this like snarky old lady who's funny. And in the
she's
book,
not
she's
funny.
Just the
she's,
worst.
She's just an insane
smart.
Rich person.
Yeah. She's just like, I'm rich. That means and they talk all the time. The word condescendingly must have meant something different. Clearly meant something different. Because they're always saying like, she's ever so condescending and lovely. It's like, yeah, she's condescending in the way that we mean it.
But I also think it's not that different, because what they mean is like, she's condescending because she doesn't have to talk to people who make so much less money than her, but she does. It has nothing to do with her tone or attitude, just the fact that she's literally speaking to them.
Class is so like... You know, there's the issue of, like, gotta get married, this clock, like, this sword of Damocles hanging over everybody's head, like, better get married or you're gonna die, sometimes literally. But also, class is woven into this book so thoroughly that you barely even notice it. Like, class is the underpinning of everything. And of course, later it becomes, like, much more explicit, but Lady Catherine de Bourgh and being ever so fine that she's condescending to speak to Mr. Collins every day, which, like, Mr. Collins is so awful. I wonder if she just loves him because he will listen to her talk.
Well, it kind of seems like they're two of a kind, is that they both just love talking about how great their stuff is.
Yeah.
Like, come to my house and let me explain to you where I got every single piece of furniture and how much it costs and why, because I own it, it's even better. Like, that's, oh, it's so boring.
They both also seem to really like talking about how great she is.
Yes.
And how she has the best taste and the best furniture and the best daughter and the best house.
It's also very clear that no one else likes her, and that's sort of why she's condescending to hang out with her inferiors, because no one else like when they have, when at the very last chapter that we read, there's like a little bit of a party there, and like Darcy is there with Elizabeth and the Collinses, and like Darcy's friend, like I can't remember
Colonel
his name,
Fitzwilliam.
Yeah,
he's a cousin.
Yeah, he's there, and he's like, oh, thank God there are other people here. He's like so relieved.
He's like the stealth hero. I love Colonel Fitzwilliam. There should have been more of him.
Yes. Let's talk about class a little bit, because I do think that to a modern reader, it's not necessarily clear who is rich and who's not, because even though the Bennets are maybe on the lower end, their father still owns an estate, even though they're not going to inherit it. But to us, I think it's estate sounds pretty like ritzy. It has a name. It's called Longbourn.
I'm not clear what an estate comprises. What exactly, like, my dad has a house. Is that an estate?
Does he own it?
Yeah.
Then, I mean, like, I would say that is actually
Am I the daughter of a gentleman?
I think equivalently, yes, you are, right?
Oh, jackpot.
Because owning the house and having it be something you can pass down and not like, okay, you have like this massive mortgage or whatever on it, et cetera, is like a certain thing. And Longbourn is one thing, but like the size of the house seems to be important. Also the amount of upkeep it takes. Like Lady Catherine has a ton of servants and like a ton of parkland as well that she also owns. And that like she presumably gets rent from tenants who live on it, which is different from just like basically owning a house, which is what seems to be what Mr. Bennet has.
Yes.
But the Bennets have hired help too,
yeah,
right?
They have a car.
They have kind of carriages.
Yeah.
They have, so Mrs. Hill would be the housekeeper, because they mentioned Hill. I was like, mm-hmm. sort it. And then they at least have a cook and a coachman.
But they also don't have specific coach horses, because sometimes the horses are needed on the farm that they work seemingly.
Right.
Yes.
So that's a thing. But like, there is definitely a different thing. Like if the lowest class are people who have jobs.
Right.
And then above that, there's like the Bennets, who are a little bit more genteel, but still not like high class. Like the lowest class is obviously not even in this book. That's Dickens. But then the Bennets, and then obviously the Bingleys and it's like the Bingleys and then Darcy's are even higher than that. Like Darcy and Lady Catherine de Bourgh are like on the same level.
Yes. Well, they're also
related.
Family. Yeah.
Yes.
But Bingley and Darcy don't seem to see any difference in class between them.
Right.
Like that, if there is one, it never comes up.
Bingley has
4,000 or 5,000 a year. It's very important.
But the difference is obviously how much Caroline wants to marry Darcy.
Yeah.
Like she's like, I just totally want to get in on that fancy ass family.
Exactly. Oh, bless her. She's the worst, but also the best.
She is totally the worst. But so obviously the title of this book is Pride and Prejudice and everyone.
Which one's your favorite?
Pride?
I liked Mr. Prejudice.
So obviously everyone in this book.
Who wins? Pride or Prejudice?
Is experiencing some form of either of these things or both or whatever. Like everyone's kind of a snob about something, right? And everyone's judging each other for something. Ben, what are you judging everyone in this book about?
Being terrible. There's so many characters and none of them are likable. I was surprised about so my problem with Elizabeth is that she is basically Jo March in the way that she is this cool girl who's not like other girls and like seems to make a point of it. And I mean, maybe that changes in the second half of the book, but I really didn't like her in the beginning. I don't like any of the others. I think Mr. Collins is my favorite character just because he really leans into being like are awful and irksome. And so I am judging all of them for being boring and annoying.
Is it my turn
for
who I am prejudiced
uh-huh.
against? So I clearly dislike Mary a great deal.
Yes.
She's such a drip. Jane, like, I laugh a lot because of Jane's tendency to be like, well, he couldn't possibly have done it on purpose when he tripped me. And, like, anything that happens to Jane, she's like, oh, it's all right. And, like, I'm like, have a little backbone, Jane. Mrs. Bennet she's funny, but I think if I had to be her daughter, I would be a murder daughter.
Lizzie Borden like
this,
situation.
Yeah, exactly. This would be a really different book if I was the third daughter. Like, swap me out for Mary, and it's like chapter 18, Mary murders Mrs. Bennet. Mrs. Bennet just... she's obviously there for comic relief, but she's just really the worst as a parent. But also Mr. Darcy, like by the end of the book, they're like, oh, all of Mr. Darcy's pride. It wasn't so bad because he's nice now. spoiler alert. But I'm judging Mr. Darcy the whole time because he's a huge dick and he thinks like, well, I'm allowed to be a huge dick because I'm a fine person. It's like, no, you're actually just a huge dick.
I would say that basically everyone in Bingley's circle except for Bingley is like that.
Yeah.
Like Bingley's just like, oh, we're in the country. Let's hang out and go to these dances.
I also judge Bingley for having very little like ability to direct himself
He's kind of dumb, right?
Yeah.
But like...
He and Jane are a good match because they're so affable. But like, also, can you imagine trying to go to dinner with those two?
Well,
like,
that's why.
Where do you guys want to go? And they're like, well, I don't know. What do you think? What do you think? What do you think? Like 45 minutes later, you've already eaten takeout, and they're still like, it would make me ever so happy. Like, they're the worst.
I mean, yeah, I think that's why they sort of need people with a little bit more strength in their lives to help them. That's why they have Lizzie and Darcy. I mean, we talked a little bit at the beginning too about how Caroline is a huge bitch. She's Bingley's sister and her entire existence, like the scene when they're all, I can't remember. I think Jane is sick. So she's staying over at Netherfield.
Yeah. She gets sick, which is by Mrs. Bennet's fairly genius design. And if I didn't dislike Mrs. Bennet so much, I'd really admire
That's
her.
Why I was like, we need to have the video game where you have to contrive to get all your kids married and just do
like,
these insane
all
plans.
All these schemes. I love it.
But so she's staying over and Elizabeth comes over and she ends up staying for a while too. And they're in the house. And there's like this one thing when they're after dinner and they all just like sit around, you have to do something in the parlor. And like Darcy is trying to read and Caroline interrupts him every second.
He's writing a letter and every other second she's like, tell your sister I said this. And then my favorite, I highlighted it, is when she's like, you don't like your pen. Let me mend your pen. I mend pens exceptionally well. Like, what do you mean you mend pens very well? You're good at fixing pens? Who are you? You're a rich lady. Why would you be a pen mender?
Yeah, it's so sad. Well, because they have nothing to do all day. Like there's a part when they talk about accomplishments and they're like, they make purse covers and table sheaths or what
like,
the fuck
ever. Netting a screen. I'm like, oh.
Yeah, it sounds really boring, but like she's trying so hard to get his attention, and at the same time she's like casting her attention. She's like, oh, everyone else here is so lame, like I can't believe they get dressed up to come to balls. And she spends her entire time there just like following Darcy around like an embarrassing puppy, and it's the worst. And then she comes up with a whole scheme to keep Jane away from her brother because she wants her brother to like marry rich so that she can marry other rich people.
She wants to do a brother swap with Darcy's sister, and so she'll marry Darcy and he'll marry...
It's very gross.
Or Bingley will marry Darcy's sister.
Basically, everybody in this book is a huge snob.
Yeah.
That's what we need to know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
However, I do think that we should have dinner parties where then we all sit around and, like, write letters to
people. I think we should have balls every week. I would love to be in a ball every week.
Did you catch this detail where they dance and, like, each individual dance is a half an hour long?
Well, because they usually ask each other to dance in sets of two, so it's, like, a 15-minute dance.
It's which is astonished me.
And it's not, but it's not like, they're like, oh,
we're not in the club.
Oh, umbrella's like, on. Like, let's dance to that. It's like a reel. It's like a long thing. Which
yeah, they're like steps and series and, I don't know, the stuff we had to learn in sixth grade.
Wow.
We learned square dancing.
Wow.
But still, like, there's an order of events within the dance.
And you're supposed to, like, talk during it. But anyway. All right, so...
Which seems like it would be chaos.
Everyone's a snob. Everyone, we judge everyone. I mean, we're the worst, too. Like, honestly, there is something kind of, like, I did, even though I hate Caroline, I was like, I do kind of recognize the moment when she and her sister are just, like, gossiping in the
Every time Elizabeth leaves the room, Caroline and Mrs. Hurst, Louisa Hurst, the other Bingley sister, even though there are five Bingley sisters, but we only ever get two, they are talking shit about everybody every time they leave the room. Like, the second they are alone.
But it's like kind of made clear to us that Mrs. Bennet is sort of annoying, and if we all met her, we probably would also talk shit about her.
Oh yeah, yeah, I'm talking shit about her right now.
Like 2/3 of this book is talking shit. But anyway, who is your favorite character? Ben's is Mr. Collins because he likes absurdity. Lauren,
this is a tough one. I genuinely have a soft spot for Colonel Fitzwilliam because he seems like the only character
you have to
who
pick
I don't
someone from the
punch.
First half, though.
From the first half. Oh, yeah. No, he's there. We,
for like
we
one chapter.
He's the only
no
person I don't hate
about.
By the end of this. I want to like Lizzie more than I do, but she seems like kind of a drip, too. I have some affection for Kitty. honestly. Like, she doesn't appear a lot, but all she does is, like, try to follow Lydia around and get into trouble and, like, be in love with random soldiers on the street, and I really feel that.
Does Kitty have any dialogue in the first half? Because yes, I swear, absolutely. Like, right around page 100, all of a sudden they dropped the name Kitty, and I said, who the fuck is Kitty?
She's Catherine. They call her Catherine a lot. But,
oh, is that what happened? Yeah. Okay. I was so confused.
Yeah, God bless Kitty. But, like, there's one point where Mrs. Bennet is upset, so she yells at Kitty for coughing, and Kitty's like, I don't cough for my own pleasure. And I'm just like, I feel you, girl. I feel you. And, like, being so dominated by her younger sister all the time cracks me up. I have soft spots for them. I guess Mr. Bennet is also, like, he's a huge dick to his kids a lot of the time, and, like, not good at being a dad or a husband, but he's got a lot of good zingers, and I appreciate
that. He does have some good zingers.
He does, yeah.
I'm gonna keep it short and sweet and say that my favorite character is clichely Lizzie, because I also just identify with her very strongly, because I'm, like, not that great of a person, and I am, like, a pretty, like, sassy asshole when it comes down to it, and I have definitely, one time a dude at a bar told me that he might be in love with me because I yelled at him for, like, a solid 10 minutes about his bad opinions and then made him get me a drink, and I feel like that's something Elizabeth would do, but also I hated that I did that because I was like, why did I even talk to this person at all? That's how I felt. Anyway, that was,
if
so,
only he had had 10,000 a year, you could
I know
be
it was
Mistress
awful
of
but
Pemberley
like it was
now.
That sense that's like, oh, like, this is fun to do the sparring and the wits, but it's also like that. I just wish I was more like Jane.
This is the big lie of this book. The big lie of this book is like, oh, it's ever so much fun to disagree with a person all the time and be super offended by them, and then eventually, like, the hatred turns to smoldering steamy.
I don't think it's a lie. I actually don't. But we'll talk about in the second episode. That's when things change a little bit more. But
I will say the flirting scenes in this book are spectacular.
Yes, they are. And that's how I flirt, and I feel it in my heart. It's not nice. It's not emotionally healthy, but it is what I do. Okay, so now we're moving on
coming together
to the die of death, because it is time.
A lot in our 10-year friendship is coming together.
To roll the die. Ben, would you like to go first?
Sure.
You get to roll for it, Warren.
What a thrill. You rolled a 5.
That means it's time for the Bad Gritty Reboot. Just to remind you, if you've not listened to this podcast before, at the end of every episode, we roll a die, play a game associated with it, and this particular game is called Pitch the Bad Gritty Reboot. There have been many reboots of Pride and Prejudice, but Ben, yours must be particularly bad and gritty. What have you got?
I've had this idea for a while where it's Pride and Prejudice, but then there are also zombies. I don't know. No,
I actually have a lot of thoughts about that book, but we don't have time.
But my gritty reboot probably involves Mr. Bennet dying very early and Mr. Collins taking over the Bennet family, and so they all have to answer to Mr. Collins. And also probably there's, like, drug money involved. I don't know.
Mr. Collins marries all of them.
Is this contemporary? Yeah. Is this, like, a weird, like, sister wives? Like,
yeah. It's like a cult, like, yeah, the Texas cult.
Which one? There are multiple.
Right.
Oh, I get it. The Branch Davidians.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
Well, that's, you know, I don't know that Netflix will pick that up, but it sounds really questionable and not family friendly. All right, Lauren, it's your turn.
All right. I rolled a 2, which is, wow, that got racist and or sexist. And this book does not get racist because there aren't other races. We never see anybody who is not Lily White, apparently. Or maybe they're all not white, but probably not. So there isn't opportunity for racism except for the general erasure. But Mr. Darcy is super sexist throughout. Like, he has lots of comments that are like, ladies are always energetic on the subject of balls. Like, like, I mean, who isn't these days? But he means dancing balls. Or, like, he'll say constantly stuff like, the bit where he talks about, oh, I never meet any woman but she's described as accomplished and all she knows how to do is dance and draw. And he's, like, complaining about women who've never learned to do anything interesting when they're literally not allowed to leave their house until they're married. Like, they have no opportunity to build up any experiences. And then he's like, why are all these women so boring? Like, it's just like, wow, institutionalized sexism sure is making my life hard.
Sorry, man.
Woof. Sorry, Mr. Darcy. But he has all of these little comments that are just like, he clearly does not like women very much. Like, he just looks down on them as generally frivolous.
I mean, if the only person, only my main example of women was Caroline Bingley, I would be like, but
that's, you know, fair.
She's the worst.
Well, Bingley has five sisters, yes. So he's met at least four
presumably
others.
Some of them are, he has his own sister. She seems all right.
Yeah, Georgiana Darcy he's seems
just,
to be like.
He might just be like a fuckboy.
Yeah, Mr. Darcy is a fuckboy, and I've said it 100 times while I've been reading it. Like, that's been the subheading of Pride and Prejudice.
We will discuss in the second episode some more complex feelings about that. But I am going to roll now, and we're going to see what I get. I got a 1, which is who's going to die, who's going to bang, but I actually already know, so I'm rolling again.
Does someone die?
We can't tell you.
So I got 6, which is share a little of the most entertaining fanfic you can find.
Ah!
But I'm actually going to cede this to Lauren because
yes!
I know you did a lot of work on this, but you can only talk about one and you have like 30 seconds.
Okay, then I'm going to pick the one that's about baseball. That's a crossover. I'm going to pull it up right now. I have it before me.
I can't believe that you even found this.
It took me like 3 seconds to find this. Title, All Is Not Fair in Love and Baseball. Blurb. A companion piece to my story, Love and Persuasion in the Times of Baseball. Whoever this author is, I want to never be inside their head. This story explores a world in which each of Jane Austen's major heroes is a professional baseball player for the Detroit Tigers.
I did not write this.
Gemma did not write
this. I told my boyfriend about it, and he was like, did Gemma write that? Are you sure she didn't? These 6 men go through their own journeys to love and a World Series championship together. That's the biggest fantasy of this.
Truly.
Eric Wentworth, George Knightley, Will Darcy won a Cy Young Award, was the American League MVP twice in 3 years, and threw 2 no-hitters before the age of 30. But even making $20 million per year couldn't make Eliza Bennett fall in love with him.
I feel like $20 million is lowball.
Yeah.
Well,
Will, you got to get Boris.
I got a little bit further into it, and she's just a high school teacher. So $20 million a year is pretty attractive.
Yeah, but like if he won 2 Cy Young Awards, he should be making a crap ton more than $20 million a year. Do you know how much money Max Scherzer makes, Lauren?
No, I don't. I don't at all, but I know that it should be plenty for someone who's so accomplished as Eliza, whatever. So there was that brilliant piece of fan fiction where all of the major heroes from Jane Austen's books are baseball players.
Honestly,
for the Detroit
that's
Tigers.
Amazing. Can't wait for the Netflix original series about it. Friends, that was this episode of Cannonballs, our first half of Pride and Prejudice. As you can see, we'll be bringing the fire for next week's episode, in which we will finish the book and we will discuss our favorite adaptations. So find those, Ben, since, you know, you may not have ever encountered the story in any form before. Lauren, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh my God, thank you for having me.
Ben, as always, I wish you luck in your lifelong attempt to emulate Mr. Collins.
Oh, well, thank you.
No, I know. Ben's much more interesting than basically every person in the book. So I'll see you all next week. And remember, if you have any thoughts or feelings and you want to communicate them to us, you can tweet at us at CannonballsPod or find us on Instagram with the same handle. And we will talk to you next week.